This is Daim Shabazz of the Chess Drum. It is October 18th, 2016, and we're about a week after the Millionaire Chess Open, which ended successfully, and Polish Grandmaster Dariusz Swartz won the event, and he defeated Grandmaster Gawain Jones of England in the final. So we have, we actually have one of the co-founders of the Millionaire Chess organization, Maurice Ashley, who has agreed to join us, and he's going to give us some of the ins and outs of the tournaments and his impressions and the immortal question about the future of Millionaire Chess. So we'll get into those subjects. But first of all, I want to welcome Maurice to the Chess Drum audience. Good evening.
Hey, Daim, as usual, thanks for having me. Always good to talk to you.
Definitely, definitely. Well, you've had quite a busy year, and I follow your activities, and you had the Grand Chess Tour that you were an integral part of as a commentator. You had the African Tour where you were part of the Millionaire Chess Qualifiers. You were the coach of the Ivorian team for the Baku Olympiad, and then you hosted the Millionaire Chess 3. So I don't know if you've quite caught up on your energy yet, but that's quite a schedule that you had in the past year.
Man, you're making me tired just talking about it. I mean, I have not caught up yet. You know, I'm a gym rat, as you may know. I need to work out. Not just love it, but I actually love it, but I need to work out. And I just find myself like making excuses and not going to the gym because I'm just like, I'm so tired, man. Gee, why am I so tired? And it's just been an amazing, hectic, crazy year, all this traveling. I went to 7 countries in 3.5 months, and that just beats you up. That just really beats you up, being on all those planes, going through all the jet lag, not knowing what time zone you're in, sleeping in beds that are not yours. You know, all of it just has a cumulative effect, and somehow I'm just still making it happen and just, you know, going to work still, teaching chess.
Well, I'll tell you what, we certainly enjoyed your post on Facebook. You were keeping us abreast, posting pictures. We didn't have to suffer the jet lag, but we still enjoyed your trips all the same. But for the Grand Chess Tour, and you've been a part of this since its inception, you've been doing the commentary. This year, you actually had a chance to go and commentate on the European leg in both France and Belgium, I believe it was.
It was Belgium, Leuven, Belgium.
Right. Can you kind of give us an idea of how what the differences were in the St. Louis arena and the European arena? What are the differences in terms of being able to reach the audience there?
Well, first of all, you know, St. Louis is a fantastic place. I mean, it's just a mecca for chess right now. They're doing great work there at the St. Louis Chess Club and Scholastic Center. That is always nice to go and meet my friends there. But I got to say, there's a different energy in Europe due to the fact, I believe, that there's a bigger fan base. You know, in the U.S., we are still struggling to get that fan base that feels that chess is an electrifying sport, something that really needs to be supported, get sponsorship, you know, all the incredible energy and belief in chess as something of a high value. So when you go to Europe, man, I mean, I couldn't believe how the fans were so into it. You know, I had people come up to me and they knew who I was. Even in France, you know, my father lived in France for many years. I speak a little French, and they were just like, Maurice Ashley, you know, we're big fans. I'm like, wow. It just had this amazing energy there, and the way they put on the show. I mean, the intros were like cinema-esque, just really fantastic appreciation for the sport of chess and the belief in it that we're really struggling to do here in the United States.
You know, it's funny. I interviewed Grandmaster Christian Scarilla, who won the under 2550 section in Millionaire Chess. And I was asking him his impressions of the model, Millionaire Chess model, and asked him if that model would work in Europe. And he seemed to be a bit hesitant to give kind of a stamp that it would definitely work. But what do you find in Europe that's so different in terms of the energy, and what causes that support that we haven't been able to find here?
Tradition. Guess has had that long tradition that it has had those hundreds of years of fruitful ground in Europe after it came from, you know, the Moors bringing it to Europe. And they have a tradition and a continuity for chess that has not happened in the States. When, you know, we came to the States, it really didn't get fertile until Morphy, right? It didn't become something that we had a champion in. And even after Morphy, it didn't explode. It hasn't been that game for North America. And then Fischer, of course, there was a boom that could have happened. And then, unfortunately, Fischer decided not to play. So there went another opportunity for a tradition to take hold that did not. But Europe has had it with continuity. That said, it doesn't mean it's all over Europe. There are a lot of places in Europe that don't have chess and don't care to have any kind of real chess going on. But there are enough places that support the game and where the fans are very much in earnest and want to participate all the time in all these tournaments that just continue to take place. I do believe that Christian has a very good point about Millionaire. Millionaire is a high-stakes tournament. You have to put down a nice amount of entry fee in order to potentially win a big prize. It's not clear to me that that would survive in Europe, where the tradition is really about the amateur player playing almost in clubs, and professionals are paid to play. They're not paying in order to play. So I think it would be just as tough a sell in Europe, the millionaire chess idea, than it has been here in the United States.
Well, it's very interesting because you mentioned the Fischer boom, and it appears, you know, in my opinion, if you look at American chess, we're struggling to get sponsors, but you have a Scholastic boom that is like not anything we've seen in a very long time. We have a number of very talented Scholastic players. The U.S. team just won the gold medal in the Olympiad, and we seem to have an energy or the makings of at least another renaissance or boom. Your opinion on why hasn't that happened? Why haven't we had the sustainability and the sponsors rushing in to capitalize off of this energy that we see happening in U.S. chess?
I think Scholastic chess has not been sold in the United States. It hasn't been sold properly. It hasn't had the marketing, geniuses, but maybe that's not quite the right word, but the marketing focus from people who are interested in marketing Scholastic chess for what it can be. The reality is that kids are going to play chess up until a certain age, and then they're going to quit, most kids. It's the story everybody gives. Oh, I used to play chess when I was a kid. Yeah, I played with my grandmother. I played when I was in high school. And then life took over. And making that bridge from the Scholastic age to an older generation that continues to play chess, that continues to want to follow it because they remember how much fun it was when they were playing back in school, that has not been done. That has not been done either. But I think that someone needs to focus on Scholastic chess itself. And, you know, you have events like the Super Nationals that attract 5,000 kids, more than 5,000 kids, parents as well, and coaches, and the like, coming to an event. That's a big-time event. That is some good numbers. Okay, it's not professional basketball. It's not football. But I don't think most Americans would even conceive that there's a big chess event like that existing as the largest chess event in the world right in their own backyard. So I think that marketing, that connection has not been made. Well, the understanding of the Scholastic boom and the depth and breadth of it, that hasn't been done yet. Somebody needs to pay attention to it. Might be me as I'm talking about it right now, but also somehow to make that connection so that there's some continuity once those kids leave high school, once those kids leave the chess circuit, which you know they will, it's probably the U.S. Chess Federation that needs to do it, is to keep some kind of connection to those kids. It's probably very hard to do. You know, they'll move, they'll go on to college, and you have to somehow track them, but I think you have to plan for that. Plan for what is going to be a big fan base that's going to disappear. Instead of having that happen, somehow maybe even cut them breaks, maybe give them Chess Life for free or at a tremendous discount. Keep their membership alive so that the magazine follows them or something. Something creative in order to maintain the base that you're getting every single year as a new generation continues to play chess while the old one seems to fall by the wayside.
Well, I know one of the organizations that I'm a member of, that as a college member, you get a discount. As an alumni member, there's a very steep increase in your membership fee, but they give you a break a couple of years after you graduate from college. They give you a reduced rate to kind of graduate you into the alumni level. So maybe it's a possibility of having something like that where you could at least keep them for a couple of more years until they decide on how they want to have chess in their life or not. But I think that's an issue that's happening worldwide. And how do you capitalize off of chess? You travel to Africa, and I followed your Facebook post, and I was telling someone, I said that trip changed Maurice, because, you know, I read some of your posts. They were kind of emotional. You went to Kenya, you went to Madagascar, and you went to South Africa, and you had been to South Africa before. But kind of give us an idea of what that trip was like, going to Kenya and Madagascar.
Those trips were tough. Those trips were tough. Seeing the level of poverty in some of the places that I went to. I mean, I grew up in Jamaica. I grew up in a tough neighborhood, I can tell you. I mean, I grew up remembering not having shoes on my feet because I just couldn't afford it, and going to school barefooted. I remember some couple of nights having to eat crackers for dinner and sometimes just water mixed with sugar because that's what we had. So I know those days. And I, you know, in Brooklyn was a step up, even though we lived in Brownsville, Brooklyn, you know, the hood. But almost anything in the U.S. is a step up from, you know, third world countries. Going to Kenya and going to Makuru, it's just a project, if you will, a slum is probably the right word for it, where sewage is flowing through the streets, where the shacks are things that you and I'm fully confident you and I could go right now and build something equivalent to those things with our own hands. The fact that there was no good sanitation removal system, so just garbage just everywhere. That really shook me, because those kids were so bright. I met so many bright kids who just saw it as their lot in life. This is where they live. What else is there? And I got to talk to some of those kids. I got to talk to groups of children and speak to the possibilities of chess, but also to recognize that it was impossible for me to help a million people. Just, you know, I can say all I want, but I'm not going to bring that kind of change by myself. And that the governments in those places were not keen on necessarily bringing those changes. In some cases, just pure corruption. In other places, just your hands up. What are we supposed to do to make change? So I went through a lot of that in each place I went to. We went into all the poverty-stricken area, not all, in each country I went into a poverty-stricken area and was able to talk to some of the kids and some of the adults. And there's some beautiful people, man. There's some beautiful people doing as best they can, doing the work that they can to help. And I am now committed to trying what I can do. You know, we sit so far away, thousands and thousands of miles away, and normally the images are flying across on our TV screens, and you know, sometimes you watch or sometimes you turn the channel and go watch some football. It's a commitment on my part now to trying to do something to make change, because you can't by yourself change the world, but there are always little pieces you can do, and enough people of goodwill doing that little bit they can do can change some substantial pieces. And I feel that that's my calling right now.
Now, I remember at the Millionaire Chess, either we had a conversation or I heard you speaking about some activity that or projects that you had in Africa. Is there anything official that you have going on there now?
No, nothing official now. Just talking with people as I'm here, trying to get involvement, trying to buy trying to build a bit of a coalition. There are people like yourself, or even this conversation, could help to do. And I'm happy to talk about it with anyone else who might be listening. Any one of your listeners who want to get in touch with me and say, I'd like to help, to figure out how we can build a coalition of like-minded people who are interested in helping. I just saw specific problems that bothered me. I mean, what's interesting is not only was Africa its own issue with its poverty, even when I went to the Olympiad, I got to see the level of the teams. And you really saw like a geopolitical inequalities taking place on the chessboard. You know, if you were a richer country, you perform better. I mean, no grandmaster is like, you don't have them flocking to Africa to live, right? I mean, when the breakup of the Soviet Union happened, those guys, you know, and women said, hey, I got to go where the money is. And so they went there and helped to build a chess culture in different places where they immigrated to. You see that being a huge benefit here in the United States, having all those Russian immigrants who came over. But people are not rushing to places in Africa in order to do that. And subsequently, you don't get a lot of training. You don't get a lot of just the physical presence of strong players. And so the level of play just so much weaker than the rest of the world. And I was just stunned watching the difference as I went from the top boards to the lower boards. I mean, people in the Olympics who were like 1300, 1400, you know, it's like, it was tough to stomach. And, you know, I take it kind of personally, in fact, and I feel that something should be done, and I'm working on trying to do whatever I can.
Well, you know, the Queen of Katwe came out on the silver screen, and there was a lot of excitement about the Disney movie, and the book came out years before that. You were at one of the premieres. I saw a Facebook post. You were at one of the premieres, and you probably saw it in Baku as well. But what is your impression of that movie and the impact that it could make in showing some of the things that you just mentioned in terms of chess being used as a vehicle to not necessarily pull someone out of poverty, but to at least to get them to dream, to think about a better future?
Well, I've seen that movie twice. I went to two different premieres, one in St. Louis and one in New York City. And I read the book before I saw the movie as well. And I also know the two people personally, both Robert Katende, who was the coach, and Fiona Matesi, who is the young lady who is the star of the movie. So I'm all over this story in terms of loving it. It's an amazing story of against all odds, human spirit, no matter what the conditions, showing that we can survive anything. It is truly one that just stays with you. Both times I watched it, I teared up watching, knowing what was coming. I still felt that lump in your throat when you're just watching something that's so amazing, so inspiring, so compelling, that everyone should see the movie. I feel that it has that power to transcend, you know, all circumstances and inspire people. And I think it does have that. It's unquestionably well done, incredibly well acted. Just a great movie. And I hope that, you know, I'm somewhat disappointed in that it wasn't probably pushed as much as it could have been from a marketing standpoint by Disney. But it'll have a long life. I think it's the kind of movie that will be a slow burn, and it will be seen at some point by everyone. But it's just going to be one of those that takes years. But it's classic. It's one that you can watch at any age, at any time, and it will bring families together. And it will also inspire. It'll inspire kids, young people, when they see it and see how much this young lady overcame to become a champion.
Now, I recently read, it might have been yesterday or the day before, you posted something on Facebook about the Queen of Katwe only making, what was it, 7 million? Or it was a...
Yeah, 7 million.
7 million. It was a low number comparative to what the expectations were. Why do you think that a movie, as you described it, well acted, well made, the cinematography was excellent, Why do you think it had such a low, a low viewership?
Well, I don't really know the answer to that question. The critics absolutely loved it. The fans, the people, the audiences who've seen it, they also loved it. So in terms of critical acclaim and fan appeal, it was there for the people who actually went and saw the movie. I think, again, marketing matters. Subject matters. You know, people might look and say, chess, I don't know. I don't know much about chess. I'm going to be bored. Right? That usually happens pretty quickly in terms of assessment. You get that when you try to teach somebody chess who doesn't know anything about chess. So you say you're a chess player. Oh, you must be smart. I can never play chess. You know, that kind of that attitude is instinctive. And I think people who have to spend their dollars want to know that it's going to be an easy return. It's going to be an automatic return. Oh, I'm spending my money because I'm going to be watching some Star Wars. People are going to be shooting at each other. You know, it's going to be an action flick and it's going to be some car races. I mean, people are hopeful, you know, you have to accept that. The buying public tends to want, I mean, you don't want to return. You don't want to go in a movie and say, maybe I'm not going to like this, and then I just wasted 2 hours, right? So I think that it's a hard call when you bring a chess movie. It's a movie that may be, you know, from a different country as well. It's just not absolutely a slam dunk that it's going to be recognized as, this is going to be good, let's go see this. Nobody's like lining up, oh, we're going to go see this movie, let's, you know, it's going to be a great movie. I think that's what it suffered from. But I think it's going to get critical acclaim. Hopefully it gets Oscar nominated and things like that to help boost it. And like I said, it's going to be one of those that people, you know, people get on Netflix and stuff like that at a later stage. And hopefully over time, Disney can recoup their investment and also make some money from it, because it is really such a wonderful movie.
Definitely. Well, you actually had another experience that we were following the Baku Olympiad. You were the coach of the Côte d'Ivoire or Ivory Coast, and it was your first Olympiad. And you got to see the action up close, as you had mentioned. Tell us what that whole experience was like, coaching the team, being there amongst the players, seeing the other 166 federations there, Baku itself. Kind of give us an idea of what that experience was like for you.
Well, first of all, I want to say the Olympiad is the best tournament in the world. Like, period. I mean, I'm not joking. The Olympiad is the best tournament in the world. It beats the World Championship. It beats Millionaire Chess. It beats the Grand Chess Tour. It beats everything. The Olympiad is hands down simply the best tournament in the world. Why is that? Because you got all these countries coming together, sending their best players from each country to compete against each other, but more importantly, to meet each other. It's like a gathering of the chess elite of all the countries on the planet. It's the Olympics. It's the Olympics. And that alone is just astonishing. I was agape. My mouth was just like on the floor everywhere. Like, wow, you know, the top players from the Ukraine and Russia and U.S. and Japan and China and you name it, just a country. And then all the African countries are there and all the South American countries are there. And it's like the Caribbean countries. Like, wow, this is just like people I've never met before, seen for the first time. It's, you know, it's just astonishing. And they go five deep in every country. So you really got to see the elite players in every single country. Well, in most of the countries anyway. I think it was about 150 that actually participated. I mean, that by itself is amazing. And I never conceived of it until I was standing in the building and felt the raw power of having that kind of elite chess, world elite chess, in one building. In Baku itself, Baku was a beautiful city, great city to visit. I never conceived of visiting there. Gary Kasparov's hometown, that's all I knew, birthplace. But Baku is a fantastic city, lots of stuff to do. And the Crystal Hall in which we played, gorgeous place to hold a chess tournament. And the government, I mean, they had the president of the country. Imagine the president of your country kicking off a chess event. Huh, we would all be on our knees for that to happen. That's how seriously they took it. So, and they also spent so much money on it. The buses, all the city buses had the 42nd Chess Olympiad on the side. I mean, they treated us like royalty in terms of saying, here is chess in our city, the Olympics, we value it. I think they spent something like $13 million on the whole event. I mean, that is what you want for a chess tournament. It was simply spectacular to be a part of the opening ceremony, the closing ceremony, the number of people who worked at the event. You were just in awe. I was in awe that chess was being treated that kind of reverence. In terms of coaching the Ivory Coast team, I mean, again, you know, I vowed to make some contribution as I could, in what ways I could. And I was asked by the head of the Ivory Coast delegation when I met him in South Africa. And he asked me if I would, yeah, he didn't ask, he begged me. He was actually on the floor. I had to tell him to get off the floor. But he was on the floor. I was like, come on. And he's like, please be the coach of the team. And they didn't have a strong team. The strongest player was 2100. Their weakest player was unrated. But it was great to spend time with them and offer my services, even though we knew we were going to get destroyed. It was humbling. And I ended up having a great time. It was a great time, and I definitely am looking forward to the next Olympiad. And I recommend every chess fan, if you haven't been to an Olympiad, you got to spend some days. Spend the last 5 days there. You will love it. I mean, it's just a sight you have to see once in your life.
Well, it was interesting. I was talking to Aladapo Adu of Nigeria, and he told me that he was watching you from afar dealing with the Ivorian team, and he said he was quite impressed with the way you were able to help them. And he said that he could see the expression on the player's face, and that they had so much confidence because, you know, you were standing behind them. And that's, in a lot of these cases, that's what's needed. It's just what's needed is a little inspiration, a little motivation. The talent is all throughout the continent in many of these smaller countries. But certainly, do you feel that the bug has bitten in Ivorian chess? Do you think that this experience is going to catapult them forward and maybe seek more, I guess, more training in chess and obviously more improvement?
I don't know. I mean, I felt like I was having an impact, yes. My worry, my concern is a lot of places will pay attention when the Olympiad rolls around, but then they go back to their regular lives. They're not chess professionals. They have to make a living. And that's might be what happens. They'll just go back and do their thing, you know, go live their life like they need to, because they got to pay bills. They got families to feed. So I don't know what it means. Maybe you plant enough, you know, just plant a seed and water it enough. And it's 2 weeks after all. It's not like years. And hopefully someone goes back and says something that creates another spark in someone else. And you don't know how far down how far forward you're paying it, right? It's like, what happens? I don't think that really matters. You just have to do it. You just have to do it and see what happens next. And I frankly have to say, it's not even like I have a special allegiance to the Ivory Coast, right? It was a personal favor that I did for someone who asked me sincerely. And I did that, but you know, I think there were other countries that I was helping too. I mean, I was helping the Kenyan women's team, for example. We sat down one night and I went over a game with the players, or women were all around me, tell them Vivo's basic stuff, just natural to be talking about, nothing special. And they were looking at me like I was telling them stuff from like the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know. What? That? We never heard that before. It's like, what are you talking about? This is basic stuff. So, you know, and then I would have discussions with the Namibian team or the Swaziland team or those from Ghana. You know, I was all over this, helping different people or just rapping with them, talking to them, trying to find out what their needs are and throwing just a couple of kernels of wisdom, because I couldn't, you know, spread myself too thin. So, for me, the experience was impactful personally, more so. I can tell you that if they weren't impacted tremendously, I certainly was. And maybe that might in the long run be more important in some ways, because I can connect, try to connect the dots, and keep the ball moving down the field, because I could just very easily say, it's not my fight. You know, I'm back home in the U.S. What do I have to care for? But somebody has to care. Somebody has to do something.